Hello and welcome to the Evergreen Way podcast, where we explore how to be a healthy leader for the long haul. My name is Andy Needham, and I have the privilege of serving on the team with Converge Northeast, and I love bringing you these conversations about what does it look like to be a faithful and fruitful leader, not just today, but into the future. You know, there was an article that sort of caught fire on the internet this week, a pastor from the Mid-Atlantic region who is stepping out of ministry. And I just want to say that not every pastor that leaves ministry or every vocational leader that steps into something new, that those are not all tragedies. But it did spark a lot of conversation, as you'd imagine, online. There was people who wanted to bring some nuance to the conversation, other people who wanted to push back on some things, others who just kind of acknowledged that we are in a moment where it is very difficult to be a spiritual leader, to be a pastor in our current world, especially in the Western context. So I want to acknowledge all those things. I think it's also important, which we talk about here in the Evergreen Way, is how are we caring for our souls? How are we building the relationships, the resiliency, the soul care, all of the things that it's going to take for us to be faithful for the long haul? And today's conversation with Pastor Mark Pena. Pastor Mark leads Grace Church in Hudson, Massachusetts, and he's led this church for over a decade. He has become a true spiritual friend of mine. We lived in proximity for most of his 10 years, and we continue to keep in touch very often. This is a church on mission. Mark is an incredible communicator. In fact, Mark is one of our keynote speakers at our upcoming Advance Conference, October 13th and 14th, hosted by Grace Church in Hudson. Advance Conference is a two-day event here in the Northeast that will help equip every leader in your church. And so I just want to encourage you to register for that. You can find all the information at advanceyourchurch.com, advanceyourchurch.com. We'd love to see you there. You get to meet Mark. But let me just tell you, this conversation today, wide-ranging. We talked about Mark's background and story. God rescued him in an incredible way from addiction. And his story of salvation is just incredible. We talk about church planning. We talk about established church. We talk quite a bit about communication and preaching. And I look up to Mark a lot in the way that he stewards over the word in a faithful, but also just very passionate way. And we talk about how he has developed that craft over the years. And so I'm super encouraged. I'm so thankful to be able to share this conversation with you. Let's not take any more time. Let's jump right into my conversation with Pastor Mark Pena. Today, I have the privilege of having a dear friend of mine, ministry partner, and someone who I always enjoy getting to chat with, Mark Pena, lead pastor at Grace Church in Hudson, Massachusetts. Mark, thanks so much for jumping on today on the Evergreen Way podcast.
Sure. It's a pleasure to be with you, Andy.
So, Mark, give us a little bit of context to where you're serving today in Hudson, being in sort of, I don't know what you call it, Metro West Boston, 495 area. Maybe a little bit of the your story. And you've been there for a few years now serving at Grace Church.
Yeah, so just last September, I celebrated 10 years being here, which, yeah, you can remember when I came. Time flies. Came from San Diego, which is always fun to say because people then ask, why on earth did you leave San Diego to come to New England? That's how you know it's a God story, because there you go. Been at Grace for 10 years now. It's been a great ride. It's been a bit of a roller coaster. The story behind Grace is they're located, as you mentioned, in a really strategic suburb of Boston. We're here in what is known as Metro West, but we're at the intersection of like the 290 and 495, which are two major arteries, which is really nice. We get a lot of traffic. There's a lot of development in our area. Over the last 10 years, I've seen a lot of diversity happen here. So all the good things that you'd want to see in a growing community. As far as my time at Grace, it's I can almost to the date slice it into two sort of themes. The first one being, oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into phase? And the second one has been, even through the pandemic, it's just been a great time of watching God move and the grace of God, seeing the gospel flourish amongst the people. But yeah, the first few years were rough because Grace, you know, had no lead pastor for almost 3 years. So I sort of came into a community that was used to running its own ship and, you know, didn't, they wanted the talking head and they didn't want anything else. So it was a real challenge during that time, leadership wise, to deal with that. But, you know, you hang in there and over the course of time, God does what he's doing in a community and he knits hearts together. And so after we got through that phase, we had a new sort of core leaders rise up and were able to cast a good vision for the church, new vision for the church. And then even through the pandemic, you know, we fared fairly well. So we're, these last few years, the last 5 years have been pretty good. I don't have much to complain about.
So, you know, there's a lot of layers obviously to that first chapter, and without getting into like all the leadership dynamics within the church, just for you personally, how did you cultivate like your walk with God and sort of the resilience and the patience, which I think is a key thing. You know, often we'll see pastors do all the hard work, the tilling, the 3-4 years of hard work. And then, you know, and God may call them, but they leave, you know, and you kind of feel like, oh, maybe on the other side of that, there was something else. But how did you kind of hold out for that promise?
Yeah. So by the grace of God, right? It's that's how it happens. I think one of the things that were very helpful, that was helpful to me from an experience standpoint, is I had done exactly what you just described. I was involved in 2 significant church plants early on that went very, very well. But I do recall, particularly this second plant that I did, you know, all the hard work, right? The labor, the going for it, the, you know, you're dealing with all the personalities and the context of ministry and all this stuff. And, you know, you get tired. You know, you wake up. I woke up one morning. I was like, surely this can't be what I was called into. This is just crazy. And it just so happened that during that season, I had a very attractive offer come float by my desk. And I thought, oh, this must be the Lord. You know, I got to go. And so that, to make a long story short, we moved away from that church plant. And I can now look back and say absolutely prematurely. Because what followed was one of the hardest for me, psychologically, internally, spiritually, one of the hardest seasons, because I saw the effect that happened to the church, what happened after I left, which wasn't great. And it really got, in that season, God really showed me how impatient I was, how I wanted, you know, I'm looking for the bigger, better deal, how I was not satisfied and content. Even through the hardships of whatever was going on in the given situation. And that lesson stuck with me. And so when I got to Grace and it got challenging, and I mean, at points, I'm not going to lie, it got super challenging. I reached out to you, I think a couple of times. I was like, help me. I'm losing my mind. That lesson came back to me and I said, okay, you know what? One of the other things was the commitment on the front end. My wife and I, we had done the church planting. We did the large church thing, you know, we had moved, you know, 5 years here, 6 years there. And we decided, we really felt like, okay, we got kids, they're getting older. We wanted to grow with a community and, you know, we wanted to grow old with a community and be with them long tenure, which I had not done. And so when we were in dialogue with Grace, one of the things that we, on the forefront that we put up, was our commitment. We said to each other and we said before God, whatever we have left, that's where we're going to give Grace and this community. And we didn't know what that would mean or look like or didn't have any specifics, but that was the commitment up front. And that also helped me to navigate some of the tough times. The harsh criticisms, the leadership backlash, all the things that you would experience, you know, when a church is sort of getting used to a new leader or, you know, that kind of stuff. So I had a good experience to prep me for this one. And had it not been for my wife and I coming together, strongly sensing that this was, regardless of what church it was, regardless of the region, regardless of whatever, we knew that wherever we landed, there was going to be a significant commitment to that community. Mm.
So I'm curious, one other thing, because you kind of alluded to this before, and I've always enjoyed sitting under your teaching and looking forward to having you speak for the Advanced Conference coming up in October. You know, I may be projecting here, but I feel like you have a, you know, a core competency for you is definitely the Sunday morning preaching. And at the same time, a lot of the challenges that you were facing were not necessarily directly related to that. If you find yourself in that type of spot, how are there discerning ways to use the pulpit? I think that there could be a negative way, right? You could actually, if you find yourself in this dichotomy as a leader, try to use the pulpit and overcompensate and not really be shepherding and feeding the people the word and being faithful and true to the text that's in front of you. But there, I'm thinking that there also are ways that you can kind of, you know, you're trying to build a culture in a church, and that has many layers to it. So how can you balance, or how did you balance maybe, you know, that those two tensions, sort of using the pulpit to lead and build culture, but not over bringing issues that may be not related to Sunday morning into Sunday morning?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and it's a tricky one because, you know, I, like many pastors that get up on a Sunday morning, it is very difficult to fight off not only your pet peeves, but whatever the situational context is in that week. I mean, it's just, it's crazy what we do sometimes. But I can say one of the sort of breakthrough moments and insights for me that God really sort of helped me work through was understanding that I needed, even when I was preaching on a Sunday morning to the church, I needed to preach from the perspective that I was also simultaneously standing with them. Mm. I am not preaching at them, to them. I am standing with them. And that really helped shape the sermon and the conversations afterward, because the people were like, oh, okay. You know, and I'd get up there. I come from a school, you know, I'm old school. So I was trained, keep your professional distance at all time. Do not bleed on the sheep, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I do respect that. I think there's some merit there. But I felt really that a key moment in helping Grace move along while I'm preaching on a Sunday morning is I wanted them to see that I wrestle with the same things they wrestle with. The things that get them angry got me angry. And so that really did help preaching on Sundays so that I didn't fall into this sort of subtle manipulation of the congregation, right? Here, let me tell you what I think you need to hear, mm-hmm. which is, you know, typically where we go. So that was a big thing. It's New England. So that was not going to be like, oh, I'm going to do that on one Sunday and everybody's going to love me next week, right? It was hard fought, being consistent, being vulnerable, being transparent. I confess, at times I probably bled a little more than I should have. But my purpose behind that was I wanted to show our people and live in such a way that they realize I'm with you. I am with you in this context. I have the same fears and anxieties and struggles. And so let's look to Jesus and let's see how Jesus helps us. This is how he's helped me. How has he helped you? And creating that kind of conversation was incredibly helpful. After a few years, I mean, now I'm very blessed by the Sundays, you know, I always get feedback and like, you know, hey, you really spoke and to the context of the things that I'm dealing with. And that, that was a great turning point. And that was a good approach. And I can't take credit for it because it was really a God, please, if you don't help me how to manage these and balance this, I'm really going to mess it up. So, that was a key thing.
Yeah, I think particularly coming in, you know, you're coming into a church that had, you know, some history to it, and then New England and all these confounding factors, like that sense of incarnate, and you were, you know, I know you have roots in Brooklyn. We'll talk about that in a minute, but you, the San Diego thing, that just puts like people's skepticism, you kind of named it partially because people's skepticism was like, who's this surfer dude, you know, coming from the West Coast, going to tell us how to do church. You know, you just preach, we'll do the rest. And you know, you're fighting those battles, but the idea of, you know, I think of it as that, you know, really modeling Christ leadership, incarnational ministry, being with people, leading, and even leadership in the Christian context is always follow me as I follow Christ and not just follow me. And so that's a really, and we talk about that a lot in the Evergreen way. So that's fantastic. So let's zoom back a little bit. We got to spend some time in Brooklyn together, hanging out with some pastors, which was super fun.
Bagels.
That was sort of, yeah, I know. You would not leave that part of the city without a bag full of bagels, which I've learned is part of one of your love languages. But that is, that area holds a lot of history for you. And give me a little bit of that and some of your, you know, the way that Christ transformed your life from sort of your upbringing.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Brooklyn, spent some time in the suburbs for a bit, but mostly in Brooklyn. Come from a broken home, came from a broken home. I'm an only child, not spoiled at all. My father left my mom when I was 7. And then, you know, so the story really gets really crazy because, so my father left when I was 7, came back, and they reunited when I was 15. My father left when I was 20, came back and was reunited when I was 24, and then fully and finally left my mom for the last time when I was 27, 28, right around when Christiny, we were married, I think, and then Christiny was on the way. So that, I mean, that's the family history, and that, as you can imagine, that spun me in all kinds of different ways. And so early on, I was 12, 13 years old. I was already using drugs. I was, you know, I was the proverbial Brooklyn city kid running crazy. And that was my life. And really, it was characterized mostly by trying to everything to dull the pain. Dull the pain of feeling rejected by my father, dull the pain of feeling like I don't fit in anywhere. It was all about dulling the pain. And so that, you know, I took that path and it led me down some pretty dark corridors. I was, after a few years, by the time, I don't even think I was like 19 years old, I had a $1,000 a week cocaine habit. I mean, I was a mess. And I pretty much had given up on myself. I just didn't have the courage to do it quickly. I figured, well, sooner or later, this is all going to catch up to me. I'm going to die, and there's the end of my story. And then, it's a strange thing. I'm in a subway getting ready to go somewhere. I don't even remember where I was going. And this girl who we used to hang out and party together, she was in the subway. She spotted me. She came over. Hey, Mark. I said, hey, how you doing? Ellie, how's it going? And she's like, great. Oh, it's so good to see you. And I'm like, so? And I started asking about all our friends, right? You're like, hey, what's up with this guy and that guy and the other guy? And she turns around, flat looks at me. And she's like, oh, I got Jesus. And my heart just sank. I was like, oh, no. This, no. And I start immediately, I was looking around like, where's the next stop so I can just get off? And she was really God's emissary of grace to me because she was relentless. I mean, after that, she knew I was back in the neighborhood, and she was relentless. And she kept looking for me, calling me, coming to my door on a Sunday morning. And finally, I figured, well, you know, I'll go, you know, get this girl off my case, this Jesus thing. So I went, invited me to a charismatic Catholic prayer meeting on the corner of 47th and 7th, St. Agatha's Church in Brooklyn. And I walked into this place, charismatic Catholic, which I still don't know what that means, but So I walk into this place. I don't know anybody. People are singing. There's a lady who's about 170 years old dancing around the place. I mean, just all kinds of crazy stuff. And then this short little man got up there and preached the gospel. And he told me Jesus died for me and who Jesus was, God come in the flesh, and that he loved me. I heard the gospel one time, my first and only, you know, that first encounter, that first time I heard it, and that was it. God opened the eyes of my heart. I knew immediately, this is who I've been looking for. I walked out that night after giving my heart and my life to Christ. I walked out that night, never looked back on my drug abuse, never had a withdrawal symptoms. I literally walked out that night delivered from my addiction. Now, we can talk about the other mountain load of sin that didn't disappear in one night, which I always, when I tell my story, I always like to remind people, look, yeah, it was a miraculous intervention in this particular area. You know, Let's talk about some other stuff and you'll see it wasn't that miraculous intervention. It was a hard fought, and still is a hard fought fight for holiness and staying faithful before God. But right after that, they gave me the Bible. They said, here, you need to read this. I was like, just one book? Just this is it? Just one? I was thinking, you know, there's got to be volumes here. What? Was one little book? And so I tore into the Bible with a vengeance. And I mean, I was just night and day. So shortly thereafter, I found a local church, got involved in ministry right away. And that, I mean, it was just from that point on, I didn't turn around and look back. I just kept going.
Wow. The persistence of a friend. Yeah. The classic line, the hound of heaven, but personified through that. And what were there other people who really were integral in terms of your ministry development and discipleship journey?
Yeah. Well, my very first pastor came from an addiction recovery background. And so he was instrumental in shaping my values, my heart, my compassion, mercy for those that struggled with any form of addiction. To this day, I'm still involved very much in recovery ministry. So he had a profound effect on me. Another gentleman by the name of Doug Hollis, he at one point, he was invited to come and speak at our church for a weekend. It wasn't some event. And this is really pivotal because it was the first time that I heard someone teach scripture and exegete scripture so clearly, so passionately, so powerfully, that not only did the message impact me, but if you ask me today, like, oh, what was the, give me his 3 points. I couldn't tell you. I'll tell you what I did impress me was when I saw what God was doing through his giftedness, I immediately said, this is what I want to do with my life. I want to do what this man is doing, modeling right here in front of me. And that, it was shortly after that, that I started saying, okay, I'm going to Bible college. I'm going to do seminary. I'm going to do blah, 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 blah. But those are probably the two. I had an older mentor down the road after I did church plants that played also a pivotal role for both Mary and I myself as an older, him and his wife, John Chandler, really sort of took us under our wing. We were young, didn't know what we were doing. So that's another guy who took time to share his personal stuff with us, his marriage, some of his own battles and stuff. So those are probably the three that stand out for me.
As someone who's been involved in church planting and in established church, if you were to give counsel, if a younger leader maybe came into your office and said, hey, I'm looking down the pike, God's stirring in my heart towards pastoral ministry. I'm considering church planting, I'm considering established church. Are there some things that you would, maybe questions you'd ask them or things that you would kind of press in on from your own experience that are, I mean, I don't think one is good and one is bad. It's really where God's calling you, but how might you discern that?
Yeah. So that would be a conversation that I would encourage, at least with a little time. It's really difficult. It's funny you mentioned this particular sort of scenario, because like last week, or no, 2 weeks ago, I had a young guy come in, literally almost verbatim, sat in my office and told me exactly what you said. You know, I really feel God stirring me to become a pastor. You know, I have this option, I have that option. He started like, you know, and one of the things I think is important is fuel the dream. There's nothing wrong with encouraging the dreaming and the possibilities and what the future may hold. I don't want to put a bucket of water on that fire, right? It's like, great. So I look at it as coming alongside and doing a lot more listening than talking, because it's really easy to fall into that as you get older, especially in ministry. You got years under your belt. You get a young guy who's coming, and you know, the vibe is, okay, you're the older sage, so tell me, what do I need to do? You know, you guy who has all this wisdom. Of course, I laugh, and in my head, I'm like, if you only knew who was talking to you, you're talking to. But, you know, it's sort of the posture for me that's important out of the gate is just to listen. Listen, listen, listen. Ask questions that reveal sort of values and motivations. Ask, you know, listen to the story, because it's in that story that you find God's fingerprints shaping this individual, you know, his or her heart for what is coming down the road. So that to me is a big one, is keep your mouth shut, listen, let the passion flow, and then come alongside that. I think that there's some things that I would say sort of as answers that I would give anyone wrestling with anything. I'm a big fan of education. So I think that no matter whatever ministry context someone is feeling God calling them into, I think training is absolutely critical. I think it's much needed. I would double down on that one today, more so than even times past. And so I would really, you know, encourage some kind of either formal, informal, non-formal education, which would include both sides, right? The mentoring relationship side, as well as the technical sort of tools of the trade, our theology, our exegesis, our those kinds of things. You don't have to, I'm a believer, look, you don't have to go and be a master at Greek translation or Hebrew translation, but I think that everyone has a response, anyone who wants to go into pastoral ministry in whatever context does bear the responsibility of rightly dividing the word. So I'm a big fan, and I would always encourage that to happen in a person's life and to keep that lifelong, right? Every time when somebody talks to me about that issue, I always refer to 2 Timothy when Paul asks for the parchments, bring the scrolls and especially the parchments. I mean, there he is at the end of his life. What is he asking for? Hey, I need scripture. I want to read. I want to learn. I still want to grow. So that's another big one in that conversation. Hopefully, as the story unfolds, and if I can develop even whether it be, this is the great thing about technology, right? So you could do this, you know, online. You don't have to be in the same town. But over the course of time, then it's just coming alongside and helping them to refine those passions, refine that vision. An established church has advantages. Church planning has advantages. There are likes, there are dislikes, there are hardships. I would encourage them to the best of their ability. Let us pray through. Let's read. Let's talk. Let's discuss. And then when the time comes where you feel a decision needs to be made, make the decision and let it be a fearless decision. Let it be in faith. Yeah, and then the question comes, well, what happens if I get it wrong? What happens if I go established church and I should have gone church planting? Whatever. I'm like, yeah, well, especially if you're young and you're giving it the first go, that's probably going to happen no matter what. And so the more important thing is that allow God to work in you and shape you and mold you. And the contextual stuff will take care of itself. I found that God was infinitely more interested about shaping me than about doing anything of great significance through me in the very beginning. So
Man, great counsel. I want to say, just really appreciate the, on the front end, you talking about, like, you know, I think it's easy, as we have walked the road of the crucible of suffering and challenge in ministry, which is part of the development journey that God leads us on, to sometimes to look to others and be like, oh, you don't know how hard it is, or to, like you said, throw that wet blanket of experience, or start to hit little levers and just kind of see, you know, again, as Jesus led his followers, I mean, he knew he had, I don't know if it was a gift, I guess it was the gift, but like, I'm glad I don't know, I don't have, you know, omniscience and I don't know everything about everyone. But he knew that about his followers, and yet still decided to journey with them and still let them make their mistakes and still entrusted to them the work of the kingdom going forward into the local church. And they still messed it up, and God was still faithful. And so,
dude, that's crazy. That's crazy. It's like, wow. If any of those guys, dude, were in our churches, we'd be like, yeah, you can't even usher. Get out of here. You know, but he goes to show you how God glorifies himself in that, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, again, like you said, there needs to be discernment and development, and all of those things need to be in the journey, but to not do that at the expense of destroying the dream of the, like, God often puts it in a heart to say, and that there is a naiveness, like a childlike faith, that even God puts into young people. And I think that the church right now, as we are in a shortage of leadership, which I see all the time, you know, I think we may need to just reignite and have more incubators to say, like, what are the dreams that God, now test those dreams and don't rush those dreams and walk the journey, as you said. But, you know, that has been the pattern of God. And so every church that we're in is a church plant. If somebody was planted, there were some crazy people that got together and started Grace Church in Hudson or whatever church you're a part of. And, you know, God may be calling people to, whether it's a new chapter, an established church, or a new church plant. And I just commend, I think there's a lot more opportunities right now to do theological education inside the parish and to kind of mix the practicum and the sort of development of the theological acumen at the same time. And so, press in on those things and develop it. That's really good. Very good counsel. And if you want to send anyone my way who wants to plant a church, I'd be happy to help them.
I will. Absolutely. Yeah. I might send the young guy who came to me. I'll just send him to you, bro.
There you go. That's great. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I also think, like, go together, like, build a tribe, whether, you know, the discerning of mentors or being part of a network of people that are going to walk alongside you, who can support you. Walk at the speed of people, and don't, like, I do think have a dream, but where I do think, especially people who are entrepreneurial and church planting oriented, sometimes get out of whack, is they'll run ahead of, you know, and it's like, man, if you just go a little bit slower, the resources and the prayer support and all these other things could kind of come along with you, which is really,
that's really absolutely keen, insightful stuff, because I can't tell you how many times in wanting to run ahead, I have fallen on concrete and scraped myself in all kinds of crazy ways. And the reality, especially now, as I'm looking back and thinking back of the years of ministry, time is, it's a necessity. It's an element that you cannot ignore. You cannot ignore it. It takes time. And the faster, I think, leaders can get on that page, I think it just makes the journey a little easier. It doesn't completely cure all the striving of ego and wanting to get there tomorrow. And this is where, in my view, this is where culture does not help us at all, because, you know, everything is, we want it now. But hard-fought lessons, but it just takes time, and you need to be okay with that. And there's times where you're not going to be okay, and then you wrestle through that, but it does take time. You have to honor the time it takes for the gospel to take root in someone's life and to shape and direct their lives. One of the things that a professor in seminary, Dr. Clinton, and we're talking about dreaming and stuff, it just came to me. In his class, one of the things that he taught that really was striking to me was he called it a sense of destiny. He said, God, when he calls, he implants in that person, he or she, a sense of destiny. And then he went on, you know, to show all these biblical examples, and it was great. But he said something, he goes, sometimes in your life, you're going to get in places in ministry where the only thing you have to hang on to is your sense of destiny, which is another way of saying is that dream that was birthed by God in you. And that that's pretty profound for me. It's true. It has rung true in my life. In the darkest seasons, dark night of the soul, it has been God's call, that sense of destiny, that word that was spoken in here that kept me going. We would do well to cultivate those kinds of contexts for future leaders.
Absolutely. Mark, in terms of on the communication and preaching side, I think another area that is easy for leaders to struggle with is that they find, I mean, you mentioned some of the influences already, a mentor who you saw the way that they, exposited scripture. And how do we balance, or how have you navigated the temptation to just take on the voice of someone who you love as a preacher? And at the same, and in the similar way, being who God has called you to be as a preacher, as a leader, as a shepherd, and to take the very best of other wise and discerning voices and theologians and preachers, but to make sure that you are being faithful to who God has called you to be and where He has called you to serve. How have you navigated that?
Yeah, well, let's start with the train wreck that was my early young preaching years. To this day, I smile and I laugh, but part of me also laments that poor congregation that allowed me to preach to them for like 7 years. And to be quite honest, every few months, they didn't know who was pastoring their church because at times, and I'm going back a ways, this is a few decades, but I mean, at times it was like, came in on Sunday morning and it was T.D. Jakes. And I was like, crazy man, like yelling and screaming and thank you, God. And then you came like 2 months later and that was John Piper. John Piper was preaching this morning. And then you came sometime after that and it was some other, notable whatever. And so
it was like TJ Maxx. You never knew.
Yeah, right. Who's coming in today? What's special is today? What's on sale? And I think probably that ran its course. And I do think that for a younger preacher, that's part of your journey is a compliment to try to imitate and, you want to model someone whom you respect has been meaningful in your life from a preaching perspective. And I think that there's nothing wrong with that. But eventually, as a young guy, you're going to face the facts and that you're not a T.D. Jakes and you're not a John Piper and you're not a Mark Pena and you're not an Andy Needham and you're not whoever else you want to throw in the mix. And so for me, it was the realization that, this is the thing great about good friends in ministry. They typically will just tell you and not spare your feelings. And so I had friends of mine like, after you sound like this guy, or all of a sudden now you sound like this other guy. And conversations like that helped me to sort of start thinking about, okay, how am I developing my own voice? Do I just mimic? And it really bothered me, right? The idea that I'm just mimicking stylistically people that I really respected or people that I liked their gift or whatever the case is. That started me on a whole journey of listening to different preaching and, different things. But really that culminated in me changing my study discipline habits, where now, like today, if you were to ask me in preparation, I don't initially consult any other voices. I'm in scripture. I'm in the word. And what I'm trying there to do is simply hear from God. And I probably ashamedly would admit that that probably wouldn't have been an approach as a younger preacher I would have taken. I wouldn't have seen that as practical, or I wouldn't have seen that as, well, that's not going to, I had literally someone one time got into a conversation years ago about this, about style of preaching. And I told them, I've learned, thus and so, and I don't rely on outside voices to shape me. I mean, there's insights to be had in books and listening. And if I got to quote somebody that I think is great, I'll quote them. I got no problem with that. But I try to be true to who I am and what God is shaping and doing in me. This guy that I was talking to, you know, I'm pouring out my heart here, and the guy turns around and says, like, yeah, I understand all that, but you're never going to build a really big church unless you're, and then he had his list of ... And I thought, yeah, okay, well, good luck with that. And, you know, I left the coffee shop. And I just, for me, it's been about taking God seriously in your personal life and listening to his voice and being in the word and culture. Now, of course, do I consult commentaries? Do I want to hear what other people have to say on whatever the text is or whatever the theme is? Absolutely. It would be arrogant not to do that. But I think we're so quick to want to get other voices involved in the process before we hear God's mm-hmm. voice and respond to that. And so that for me has been a significant shift in even how I prepare and my preaching and the whole thing.
I appreciate through this conversation how you have held high the idea of, you know, learn, be able to steward the word well and do the education, do the journey, but also maintaining that sense of like, this is not just an academic exercise. We're not just giving lectures on an ancient text here. Like, we are encountering the living God through his active word, through his spirit that is alive and well here today. And, you know, that's, I think it's just a great reminder for us, because sometimes, you know, the temptation is that we all have our bias, right? We may have a bias towards academia. We might have a bias towards just being impressive, like you said, or modeling a certain voice. And it's true in our personal life, but it's also true in our leadership and the way we communicate, that we need to be coming from the well of the living God. You know, that if we lose that, and I just commend, you know, I have to be careful I say this because I make you sound old, which you are not an old man, but the experience, I appreciate so much.
The baldness and the white beard fool you.
Yeah. Well, Mark, I just commend, like, and part of what has drawn us into friendship is, one, you just have an authentic, very authentic faith. You don't have a lot of pretense in your own challenges and struggles. And we've connected different things that we've walked through in our own lives. But just, you know, living out that experience of leadership as a pastor in a way that continues to hold forward the beautiful gospel, of Jesus, the one that we get to walk with him. It's not just a concept of access to heaven, but it's a daily experience of God that we get to have. And to do that with holding scripture high and not just having sort of the, you know, the dancing lady and the charismatic, but God worked in that space too, obviously, as we have already said. So that's a really, really awesome thing. So Mark, one final question. I just want to get a little lighthearted after spending time in that deep. What do you do for fun, Mark? What is something that you just enjoy that is not work related that just gives you joy?
So a couple of things. Yeah. So in our family, we love to laugh. We love to laugh at things and really love to laugh at each other. So for me, being with my family, laughing, being humorous, and that has a bit of spontaneity to it naturally, but it will never happen mm-hmm. unless we make space for that to happen. So whether it be a board game, whether it be, you know, watching a movie, whether it be going out. Well, so we do a lot of, you know, we go out to eat, we go hang out, we'll go for walks, we'll do board games, we'll do whatever. But the content, the point of all of that is so that we can spend time laughing together. I am, and you know this about me in terms of humor, I think humor can be misused. And yeah, but I think laughter is good medicine for the soul. And so for me, one of the things that I love to cultivate in my life just to have fun is be with my family and laugh. Now, outside of, you know, that kind of stuff, there are personal things that I like to do. I just, interestingly, about a month ago, I rekindled an old hobby that I had during my seminary days, and I now started collecting comic books again. So I'm an avid comic book collector, DC and Marvel. So I'm on both sides of the universe there. So that's been the latest thing that has sort of helped me sort of disconnect in a meaningful way and sort of refresh, relax, do something that I really enjoy and stuff like that. And it's been like that for the last several years. There's a time where I spent some time drawing and pencil sketching, and that was a nice thing to do for fun. Just get out there in nature, or just sit down somewhere and grab my book and start sketching. Love to travel. So one of my favorite things to do, and if it's just my wife and I or with the kids, jump in the car, get on a freeway, and whoever wants to shout out whatever exit we want to exit, we'll exit, and let's see what's in this town or this place. Got into some pretty strange situations doing that, which of course, right, makes memories. And so to this day, you could talk to my wife or myself, my children, and be like, you remember that time we got off when Lacey said, get off here? And we got off and, oh my gosh, we were really scared because it was getting late. And so those kinds of things for me are just so much fun. Of course, that's when awesome. You're in it, maybe not so much, but you know, afterwards they do create great memories.
That's great. Well, I've shared meals with your family and laughter abounds and the food is always really incredible. You have some great cooks in your family as well. So we'll have to set up another time to have that happen. So Mark, thanks so much for jumping on today. This has been, I've enjoyed as always conversation with you, and I look forward to continuing to do kingdom work together in this region for years to come.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Again, it's great to talk to you. We share a like-hearted passion for the church, for the local church, and for new and established leaders. I think that much like you, I am very positive about the future of the church, particularly in New England. I look at these young leaders and I'm really encouraged by what God is doing there. So thanks for having me on. It's great to see you.
Well, thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Evergreen Way podcast. On behalf of our entire team at Converge Northeast, it is a privilege to bring you these conversations to help you be a healthy leader for the long haul. We would love to connect with you. Find us on Instagram at Converge Northeast and send us a message. That's an easy way to connect with us. Or you can send me an email directly, andy@convergenortheast.org. We'd love to know what you think of the podcast, ideas you might have, or even suggestions for potential guests in the future. Please remember to follow this podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you would, do us the favor, leave us a review. Let us know what you think and help other people discover this resource. Until next time, this is Andy Needham with Converge Northeast. Thanks so much for tuning in.